listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. Today we're going to learn about PALS. What is PALS and how do we care for church workers, especially in their first few years serving? In how do pastors and their families, how do we care for them in their first few years of serving? Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu. Live uncommon. Joining us today in studio, the Reverend Steve Wagner from Concordia Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. He's also a PALS facilitator. Steve, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for asking me to be here. It's great. We're having a wonderful meeting here in St. Louis and surrounded by a bunch of good friends and people who are participating as facilitators as well.
Great. Can't wait to learn more about it. Also joining me in studio, the Reverend David and Cassie Weaver from Trinity Lutheran Church in Stewartson, Illinois. They serve as PALS facilitators as well. Thanks so much for joining me today, Weavers.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start with, what is PALS, P-A-L-S? Pastor, you want to start us off with what a definition of PALS?
So PALS stands for Post-Seminary Applied Learning and Support. And it's a program that is set up to help those pastors and their families as they come out of seminary in that education realm and begin their life as pastors of congregations. It's a support system to help them make that transition, but also help them with some of those real life situations that they might face that, although the seminary has trained them well, sometimes the surprises of life catch you. And so this is an opportunity to meet with other pastors in a similar situation, the first 3 years out of the seminary, to ask questions, to seek advice from others, and just sort of have a chance to build some relationships that can help support each other through the ministry.
When did you first learn about PALS?
Well, when I came out of the seminary, PALS was just getting started. And unfortunately, my PALS group didn't get together. The facilitator had some issues that caused us not to meet. And so I'd heard about it, but didn't really have much experience with it. About 8 years ago, my district president asked if I'd be interested in helping out the district by being the facilitator. And I sort of said, sure, without really knowing exactly what I was getting into, but just knowing that it was an opportunity to help those new pastors as they begin their ministry.
When did you first find out about PALS, Steve?
I first found out about PALS when I was asked to actually be a facilitator. I graduated from the seminary. There wasn't that kind of program. But as I became familiar with the program and thought back over those first 2 or 3 years when I was coming out of seminary and starting my ministry in a local church, there was a friend who lived in a church close by, a Lutheran pastor who invited me into his life, and I invited him into mine, and he coached and counseled and recommended and facilitated all of those things that really helped me to do well in that time of transition. I know enough about myself, and I know enough about the specifics of all of that to know that I'm sure that there would have been some very difficult moments in those first 3 years to transition, not navigated well without that friend who would come in and walk through those times with you. That's what PALS is today for the guys who graduate from the sim.
And not just the guys. Cassie, tell us about your involvement with PALS. What was your first experience?
Well, like David, when we were asked by the district president to be the facilitators, and it's been just such a joy to meet with the wives and give them that connection to somebody else living the same life they are.
Mm-hmm. How important is that to the wives to have that support? What kind of response do you hear from pastors' wives by having that support and that connection?
Our wives of our group, they've really connected. They get together outside of our PALS events. They've all got young children, and it's really giving them somebody else that they're walking the life with and raising their children the same. And that,
David, what are some examples of, if we didn't have PALS, this situation would be even more challenging for a new pastor?
Well, I think probably one of the greatest benefits of PALS is just being able to build that relationship with other men, other wives, other families that are in that same situation. Being a pastor puts you in a different category than most people. And so it's not to say that people can't relate to you, but it's hard to understand the requirements, the things that are asked of a pastor unless you've walked in that. And so PALS helped you build those relationships with people that if a situation comes up in your congregation and you don't know exactly how to handle it, hey, here's somebody I can call up, ask some questions. And as I sometimes tell my PALS pastors is, this is a place where you're all still new. You can ask those questions that are questions that new pastors need to ask that they might not feel comfortable asking with a group of more experienced pastors who might be like, oh, I dealt with that years ago. Why are we talking about this? But with them all being in their first few years, they're all still learning those things and are in a safe environment where they can ask those questions. And so some of the topics that are discussed are in regards to, you know, how do you make connections with your members? How do you visit your members? Build those relationships so that you can be a good pastor to this congregation. A couple of topics that we've gone over in my group are dealing with some of the situations they'll face. So cohabitation, how do you address that, especially as a new pastor where you don't want to necessarily come in and just be a bull in a china shop, so to say, but how do you handle that in a nice way that shows the problems and difficulties with that, but also still keep that relationship going so that you can still guide that couple that maybe is stuck in cohabitation.
Mm-hmm. Other things that pastors might face in their first few years where PALS would make a difference helping them in those first 3 to 5 years?
Well, I can think not only of tough topics like the one that David is mentioning, but I can think of just simple things that you have to understand something about, like just managing your own time.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that there's time for your spouse, your children, if there are children, for yourself, to take care of yourself, for building relationships with people. So time management is something. I can remember very well the first time I had to do a funeral, and I didn't really understand all of what that meant in terms of caring well for the family who is going through bereavement. And I've had those kinds of questions from the PALS group that I helped to facilitate. How much time do you put in sermon preparation? How much time do you do for Bible class? How much time is it for all of the various sorts of projects, while at the same time building a sense of rapport and connection and trust with the congregation? That becomes a really critical piece, because when you walk in the door for the first time, if people are honest about that, they assume trust, but you don't necessarily have trust. And so how do we begin to build a sense of trust so that when the big questions come up, people can know that your answers are trustworthy and consideration needs to be given to the kinds of counsel that you're offering.
Hmm. You know, we often think of pastors being stewards of many important things, but we forget about being stewards of time and stewards of trust as well, and how we handle those. That's pretty important. What are your responsibilities as facilitators? What are you responsible for as a facilitator for PALS?
So with PALS, one of the things that they ask of us is to meet regularly with our group. And so Cassie and I have sort of come to the agreement that we shoot for a meeting with them 3 times a year. We start on a Sunday afternoon and go through Monday afternoon. And that's the opportunity to study topics, to have a time just to visit and talk, let them ask questions. We also try to reach out to them, especially as they're coming out of seminary, getting ordained and installed, to visit with them, introduce them to PALS. Thankfully, most of them have heard about PALS through the seminary, and so they have some idea, but get to know them. And just really be there as the support that they need. And so Cassie and I both tell them, you know, if something comes up and you need somebody to ask a question of, feel free to reach out to us. But it's basically we're facilitating the opportunity for them to build that relationship with other pastors and to have that time to continue to grow in their learning and study, but also time to I guess, say, let your hair down and relax a little bit, mm-hmm. which sometimes you don't have a whole lot of opportunities to do that in the parish. Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything to add to that, Cassie?
It's a time for them to be a family. We typically have worship times built into our meeting schedules. And so they can sit as a family instead of dad being mm-hmm. up in the pulpit. They get to sit with their kids and their wife. And just that, because so often pastors and families don't have that option either.
Mm. We're learning about PALS today, post-seminary applied learning and support with facilitators for PALS. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. Today we're learning about PALS, post-seminary applied learning. We're meeting with facilitators to learn about that. The Reverend Steve Wagner of Concordia Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas, and the Reverend David and Cassie Weaver, serving Trinity Lutheran Church in Stewartson, Illinois. We've talked about your responsibilities and how PALS has made a difference for many pastors and their families in the short time that it's existed, about 20 years now, roughly. What aspects of ministry and marriage are impacted by those first 3 to 5 years that we might not be thinking about when we're caring for, as lay people, caring for our pastors? What aspects of life for that pastor and for his family might we not be thinking about as the congregation where we can help encourage them to participate in PALS?
Well, one of the things that I have discovered along the way is that as you begin your ministry, you're really in a negotiation process. You know, you're negotiating time with your wife, you're negotiating time with the church, you're negotiating time with people who really both appreciate your accessibility and in some cases expect that accessibility. And so as you begin that process, it's a way of saying, okay, what is essential to who I am and what I do as the called pastor of this church? And for when I can be very clear about that, that begins to help me establish some boundaries. But it also assumes, as I establish those boundaries, that there are others who can do other things as well. And as Lutherans, we have this wonderful understanding of the priesthood of all believers and this whole empowerment of laity for support and encouragement that's horizontal for one another. And so a part of what at least I found in my life was helpful in negotiating all of that is to say, this is essential to who I am and what I do. But also a piece of that is the development of others around me. So that even from the very beginning, there is this sense of shared partnership in the gospel. Paul talks about it in the epistles, but there is that has an immediate impact in terms of my schedule, my life, my family, my home, and I'm using my a lot, like it sounds kind of selfish, but the fact of the matter is that without those boundaries, most pastors enter into these sort of arrangements wanting to give more than they actually can sustain long term, okay? Mm-hmm. And so that idea of developing others alongside with you becomes a kind of a clear component to this entry process, because I understand my own limitations and I've created these kinds of boundaries around the call that I have to serve the church.
What does your work as a facilitator look like? You're here in St. Louis right now. How often do the facilitators meet? Is it an annual meeting that the facilitators come together for I guess, collaboration and training preparation before you go back out into the field? Is that about once a year? Is that right?
Yeah, it's annual.
Yeah, so annually they have a facilitator training, which is an opportunity for the facilitators from all the districts to come together. Some of it is helping the new facilitators who maybe are brand new, haven't done this before, learn some of the nuts and bolts, so to say, of how do you take care of filling out an expense report for your meetings as PALS facilitator. But then for the ones of us who have been facilitators for a number of years, it's an opportunity to see some familiar faces, catch up with them, but also share ideas as to, hey, with our group, we tried this year and it worked great. Maybe it's something that could work for your group. Or, you know, what resources have you used with your group that the guys really latched onto or the wives really latched onto? And I think it'd be beneficial, you know, that we get some more groups, some more PALS facilitators using that. And so those are all part of this training that's going on here.
I think you shared earlier that PALS groups meet typically like 3, maybe 4 times a year. Geographically, what are we talking about when it comes to a group? How what's the range look like for a group, and how many pastors or families might be in a PALS group?
My PALS group for the Central Illinois District is sort of a nice compact group because my district is a smaller size. This upcoming year, starting in September, we're going to have 10 families that are part of our PALS group. The hope, of course, is that all of them are able to make the meetings. But of course, as pastors, we know that things come up. And so, but the hope is that they all are able to make it. I know other districts are big enough that they do have multiple PALS facilitators. I think Texas is one of them that has multiple facilitators as well. And Steve can maybe share a little bit about how they work that in Texas.
Yeah.
Texas is a big place.
Yeah.
And yes, there are 4 areas to the district, and each of those 4 areas has a PALS facilitator. Now, the area that I serve is the South Texas area. So South Texas means essentially everything. If you drew a straight line east and west, that included Austin, Texas, and went all the way down to the border with Mexico, that would be the geographic area. If you're in the tip of Texas driving to Austin, that's about a day's drive.
That's pretty,
before
yeah.
you even get started at a meeting. So we try to be real sensitive to that.
Yeah. Yeah, geographically, I mean, we've got some wide open spaces across the LCMS. So I would imagine for some, traveling might be kind of challenging. And as you shared, you know, pastor's family schedule might be challenging as well. So Cassie, what's it like when you get together with other wives? What's that time like for you and for the other wives to just have that quality time together?
Our ladies, we just met earlier this month, and there was a lot of time with them talking amongst themselves about, one of them has started homeschooling and what that looks like for her family, and a couple others are thinking along that lines. You know, they can kind of use each other as resources, asking, you know, they're not at the point of confirmations yet by any stretch of the imagination, but they're building those relationships, and they can work with each other and, hey, here's something I've heard about, or just kind of that soundboard mm-hmm. for each other.
Certainly ministry and ministry families face challenges. There are always challenges in ministry, and how do you safeguard against coming together and just maybe one-upping one another on, you know, difficult situations, or I don't think commiserating is the word, but, you know, how do you safeguard against just comparing difficult situations against one another?
There are difficult situations for sure. Not every meeting has multiple difficult situations to resolve. I think there's creating a space where people can talk honestly about what ministry is like. Mm-hmm. Inside that same space, to have colleagues who can speak words of encouragement and hope and healing. The role of a facilitator is to help with a kind of a coaching approach or a mentoring approach. Sometimes it's a teaching approach, a counseling approach, whatever it may be. But it is bringing a problem, but it is also a focused opportunity to work toward healing and resolution and constructive steps. It's a way to learn and grow so that I'm better dealing with issues the next time, as well as resolving the issue that needs to be resolved this time.
I think part of it is having that safe place where people or the pastors or the wives can share their difficulties, their troubles, their trials, but not simply making it, like you said, well, that was a good story, but I got a better one. But talking about, you know, okay, so this is your struggle, this is your trial. How can we address that so that the one who's in that struggle or in that difficulty is able to go back to their congregation with an idea or with some plan, and the other pastors maybe haven't faced that situation, but are prepared now if that situation were to come up in their congregation. They aren't going from ground zero. They have something that they can use as a plan for how to handle that.
And I think another thing is they have that time to share that struggle, but then we also, as facilitators, try to encourage them, okay, where's some of the joys that you have? You know, not leave it just at the struggle. Let's find some joys, because there are some. You have some. You're stuck here in this struggle, but think bigger kind of thing, too.
How can you learn from mistakes? Say, for example, I'm a pastor, I make a mistake, I bring that story to pals. Does it benefit others in the pals group to be able to learn from each other's mistakes?
Oh, I think so. Yes. It reinforces the honesty that is a part of a pals group. It I think it's humbling to say, you know, I was trying, but I didn't do as well as I had hoped. Mm-hmm. It's a place to practice forgiveness and restoration, encouragement. In that sense, I think that PALS is something of a grace place, and that's part of the reason why I love being with the pastors that are part of the groups that we have.
Mm-hmm. Anything else to add?
I think that...
Well, thank you all for your time and your investment, being a part of the PALS facilitators and sharing your story with me here today. Thanks for being my guest on the Coffee Hour today, the Reverend Steve Wagner of Concordia Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas, serving as a PALS facilitator, and the Reverend David and Cassie Weaver of Trinity Lutheran Church in Stewartson, Illinois, also PALS facilitators. Thank you so much for being my guest on the Coffee Hour.
Thank you
for having us.
You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO, Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.